email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, our relationship experts, Alison Keating and Ray O'Neill, are with us. Alison is remote. Hello, Alison.
Hello, how are you?
Ah, coming in loudly and clearly. And Ray is here in studio. You can hear Alison.
I can indeed.
Alison, you can hear Ray.
I can.
I can hear you both. Great. And everybody at home, yay. Right, we've a good few to get through, and some of them are quite long. So this one is on parenting styles. Hello, Ray and experts. My wife and I have two different parenting styles. I tell our boy once to do something, and if he doesn't do it, I make him without involving my emotions. My wife will tell him over and over and get upset. I don't respond to tantrums. My wife often gives in. Because of this, my wife is often exhausted and loses patience. How can I help her change her style without coming across as overcritical? Alison.
Okay, so I suppose two things stuck out for me. The make him was quite strong. Mm. So I wonder, does the child do what they're told because they feel a little bit scared? Whereas the wife perhaps, and it's a pain having a child and having to ask them over and over again, but I hear more of a kind of a connection piece in terms of the wife. And in terms of the husband saying he doesn't respond to tantrums, I just would wave a little flag on that one, because children don't have the ability to regulate their emotions. So they get overwhelmed quite often and they become quite dysregulated, and that will come out as a temper tantrum. And it's our job as a parent to try and help a child kind of learn how to regulate and how to identify different kind of, they're feeling very angry or if they're feeling very sad. So if you leave a child alone with that, they begin to kind of think there's something wrong with their emotions. They suppress them, they push them down. So our job as a parent is to help them learn how to co-regulate, and that's by you being that safe person they can come to. So I suppose I'd have a little concern about that. So I would think it would be a great, you know, place to start having a conversation about where both of you got your sense of beliefs with parenting, and that comes from your own parents, and to talk about how you wanted to work together. Because I can hear this husband, he sees his wife, you know, very tired and exhausted, and he wants her to be better. And it's just trying to find out a way that kind of perhaps you could mix the styles or just have a really important conversation about it, because parenting is one of the most triggering kind of experiences that you can have every single day. And I think people don't take into consideration that sometimes we have these very strong ideas about parenting that have come from our own experience of parenting.
Yeah, he does have, because he's saying at the end, how can I help her change her style without coming across as overcritical? So in his world, he is right.
In his world, he's the one that's right, and his wife and his child are the ones that are wrong, and his wife and his child are the ones that are getting over-emotional because they're not agreeing with him. As Alison absolutely says, it's okay to have different parenting styles. Sometimes difference can complement each other. And so, again, the child is the child. Let him learn. Be on the same thing. Sometimes in a team, you've got a defender and you've got a goalkeeper. You don't have to be in the same position on the pitch.
Okay. So, but I think, Alison, your advice is good. They need to have a chat about their parenting styles and why they think their particular way of doing things is the right, and maybe go back to how they were treated as children by their own parents. And that might be a nice chat to have, won't it? And I think only good can come from that. And I hope that works out. Now, Ray, this is me, Ray, Ray and you, Ray, and Alison. I'd really appreciate if you could ask your guests how a person who constantly suffers the pain of living with a narcissistic partner. Over the years, I've constantly been the subject of what I now know is narcissistic behaviour. Only in the past few years, my own family have alerted me to the fact that their mother, my wife, is narcissistic, and I am her supply, in inverted commas. I found out that this means she will constantly find fault with everything I say, do, think, or my responses to simple statements or conversations. Apparently, this pulling me down is her way of bringing herself up in her own estimation. Not only does she do this to me personally, she also tells other extended family members and her own friends how awful I am, twisted truths and downright lies about what she alleges I said. Having been very successful in my professional life and being highly thought of by all former colleagues and my own friends, it is very difficult to combine this with the pain at home, particularly since I retired over 5 years ago. I've done research on this, and there are some useful resources online on how to deal with the issue. I would like to hear from a professional what is the best way to deal with the problem, which is ongoing for many years. Thank you so much for bringing the two professionals on air, and I hope they will be able to shed some light and hope on the problem. Kind regards. So narcissism, Ray, will you just define it for our listeners first?
Well, I suppose there's healthy narcissism, and we all should have a bit of self-esteem. Self-value is based on valuing yourself, seeing yourself. That's healthy narcissism. Narcissism, for some reason, has become a taboo, problematic word, and we're throwing it around a lot. It's okay to like yourself. It's not okay when you have to put other people down in order to like yourself. And that's when narcissism can become destructive to self and to others.
The word is wrongly used by a lot of people?
A huge amount.
Okay. Mm. So sort of disruptive or destructive narcissism, how does that appear?
Well, what it does is it's based on putting other people down.
Ah, right.
So again, like, good narcissism is recognising one's self-worth, but it's in celebration of self alongside others. Destructive narcissism is where your self-worth is based on minimising, reducing,
okay,
or belittling others.
And Alison, supply, that's a new word to me in this context.
Yeah, I suppose my concern would be that this person is in a lot of pain. They're in like huge conflicted pain, like that their public and private life are really at odds here. Mm. And they're really feeling subjugated to a lot of criticism and put down at home. They've done reading online. And I suppose one concern I have, and like Ray, you know, when people actually have narcissistic personality disorder, it's a psychiatric condition. It has to be diagnosed by a psychiatrist. People can have narcissistic traits. And I think when we go down in terms of looking at the supply, we might lose some important information as to there's a lot going on in this relationship that isn't actually right. And I wonder, possibly it won't happen, would the, you know, his wife speak to somebody? That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to actually fix the situation, because sometimes if someone is a narcissist, therapy, they can be quite therapy resistant sometimes as well. My question would be, rather than them being the supply, like, what does this person actually need? What's actually going on for them? And then sometimes, and in a situation where you're in an emotionally destructive relationship where it is narcissism, it really destroys someone of their self-esteem. So I'm going to ask, what do they need to do? Do they need to go to therapy themselves?
The wife. Does the wife need to go
to
therapy?
I know, but I would suggest that this person needs to go to therapy as well, because if you're in a relationship with somebody, you know, a long-term relationship, and if, you know, there are narcissistic traits there and you've been constantly put down, it's going to have a major impact on your self-esteem. Sometimes you have to look at what you can actually control. What are the controllables here?
Okay.
He can go and seek therapy to deal with a lot of the different issues that are coming up, you know, in what they've written in with. There's, you know, the whole family can see it as well.
Yes.
And that's very difficult. It's a long-term problem.
I'm going to ask Ray about this, because they've diagnosed their mother.
Yes.
As narcissism, Ray. Is the diagnosis correct?
I can't make a diagnosis without seeing
it. Yes, of course, yes.
So again, I think what Alison is saying, one of the reasons why it would be good for this person to go and talk to someone is that they have a lot of information, a lot of knowledge, they've made a diagnosis, but they haven't shared their experience.
Uh-huh, right.
The thing about being a supply comes from addiction discourse. And so this idea that I've enabled person,
right, yes,
and
yes,
I've supplied them with the poor behaviour,
yes,
or go and talk to somebody else, even if it's just for a one-off session, to kind of, I suppose, to get support, but also to have all that information and research made three-dimensional in a lived experience.
Uh-huh. So you can have a discussion about what you've read online.
Exactly.
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. And I hope that works out for you. Now, we have time for this. Hi, guys. I'm a 55-year-old woman who has no contact with my elderly parents for almost 5 years. I made this difficult decision due to the emotional abuse from my mother. How do I navigate the guilt? Now they need some support with living. Carers come into the home daily and one brother helps out, but I'm the only girl. To be honest, I'm afraid to reconnect with my mother, as she has no accountability for her behaviour. She displays narcissistic traits too. She would use comments like, I never said that, or you're too sensitive. Any advice? Thank you. Alison.
So it's interesting. I answered a question about this in The Independent this week in terms of the long-term consequences of estrangement. And I suppose two of the key points were, when should you reconsider? So in this situation where they haven't been in contact for 5 years, and I suppose in answer to that, it's if there's going to be a change in behaviour. And again, when someone's saying that the mother was emotionally abusive, that's very strong. And again, I hope this person is seeking therapy as well to get support with that. And it's a decision whether to go back. It's very hard to go back. Making that decision to move away from the family must have been very difficult. Sometimes people, you know, in estrangement, they are the cycle breakers in families. And, you know, I'm sure it's very difficult on the brother as well. But walking back into what potentially is emotionally abusive is also very, very challenging. I'm glad there's help coming into the home. But it's something I think that should be discussed more in therapy.
Yeah, it's a bit of an all or nothing one. And if you're somebody who's been submersed and immersed in a family dynamic, a parent or indeed in a relationship, when you get out of it, you're like, oh my God, why would I ever go back? Mm. But you can go back. I always call these relationships like Chernobyl. You can go back, just minimise the exposure time and wear a radiation suit.
Okay.
So if you do go back, to just be polite, because the guilt of the mother passing would be very, very severe for any human being. But you might just go, I'm only going to go in for a couple of hours and I'm going to make sure that I have a support friend or somebody that I can decamp it all with afterwards.
So on your terms.
Exactly. Get in and get out.
Yeah. This must happen an awful lot.
A huge it amount, does. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, because when we become adults and we have our own lives and then we realise that it shouldn't have been the way it was for us as children, we look at our parents in a different light. Some people do. And then they go, oh, good luck. I don't want any part of that in my life.
But you know what, Ray? Sometimes, genuinely, you know, relationships can forge and change if the other person is willing to do that. Sometimes they are and sometimes they aren't. But I have actually seen people come back from estrangement and kind of, you know, make amends together. And if someone is coming towards the end of their life, sometimes people are more open to that, sometimes they're not. So there is hope there.
Yeah. Are the offenders conscious that they have offended?
So that's where the narcissistic label, I think, is interesting. A narcissist is never going to see their faults.
Okay.
So they're always going to put the faults on somebody else. Like, it would be amazing if the mother here kind of reached back and said, I miss you.
Highly unlikely, though.
Yeah, highly unlikely. Mm-hmm. And if you're waiting for that, like, this is, I don't want this person or any person to be disappointed.
If they're waiting for that, it's not going to happen.
Exactly.
Yes.
Go in on your terms, with your expectations low.
Okay, that's good advice. Alison, thanks so much for joining us remotely today.
Thank you.
Hopefully we'll see you back in studio the next time.
Yes.
That's Alison Keating there, psychologist. Ray O'Neill, psychotherapist, thank you so much for coming into studio.